Explore a wide selection of luxury spirits, wine, and champagne at ReserveBar.com. Elevate your gifting this year with rare and exceptional bourbons, tequilas, scotch, wine, champagne, with personalized engraving, exceptional glassware, and more. From wines to whiskeys, there's a bottle for everyone. For a limited time, save $20 on your order of $150 plus with the code IHEART at ReserveBar.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey everyone, it's Bobby Sylvester. We just gave away the big Odell Beckham signed jersey from pristineauction.com, and we'll be giving away another sweepstakes here soon. Pristineauction.com has been awesome in letting us do these giveaways. Please support them by seeing what they have for you. They auction off hundreds of great memorabilia items every day, and their website's super easy to use. I've got my Jaguars helmet here in my office, and you can get one too, or whatever team you like for your cave or your office. Or you can get something awesome like an Al Pacino signed Godfather frame movie poster that they have today. Just check out pristineauction.com and make sure to let them know Fantasy Pro sent you. All right, let's talk some football. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. We're just a few days away. I'm Bobby Sylvester, as always with Mike Tagliere. Tags, how was the weekend, man? Had some great college football. Now the real deal this week, buddy.
It was good. I mean, I actually stay away from college football a little bit during the NFL season because my family would pretty much hate me. All week long, like, I kid you not, we kind of give up our lives for football. And so Saturday is like the only day that I kind of have some time to myself. So I try and enjoy it. We did a barbecue with some friends and had a good weekend, man. How about you?
Yeah, it's good, man. I'm just so excited about football. We just found out we're going to be moving into a new house in December. And, I'm excited for Jaguars football. I can't believe I'm saying that. I was a Rams fan for so long. I haven't been excited about a football season since like 2004. So this is fun for me. They're still probably going to win like 8 games, but, you know, that's better than the Rams have ever done. So today we're going to be answering questions from the listener mailbag for the season, then talking about last second waiver wire options to add. If you want any draft advice, we've got like 40 relevant episodes that you can find on iTunes. So go back and get those. Our guest today is Pat Fitzmaurice, who writes for the Football Girl, 444.com and SI.com. You can find Pat on Twitter at Fitz_FF. Hey, Pat, how's it going?
Bobby, I'm doing great. Tags, nice to be on with you guys. Hope you've enjoyed your holiday weekend so far.
it's not really much of a holiday at this point, but you know, every day's a holiday working in sports analysis, right?
That's kind of how it is. And I mean, we're now like knee deep, right, in week one stuff, where I'm so excited to finally release some content that's going to be week one relevant. And I know we're going to be talking about that throughout the week. I know we have 3 episodes this week, but today, you know, hitting some of this news, there was a lot of things that kind of took place over this weekend, guys. And number one, I think that we should start hitting on like right off the bat is talking about Andrew Luck. They've announced that he's out for week one. That's actually official now. I think we've all been expecting that. But the big news is that he was not placed on the PUP list, which means that, you know, he's not forced to miss the first 6 games. Right now, I'm estimating, I would say I think I'm comfortable saying 3 weeks. Where are you guys at on everything? What does this do for the Colts skill position players? Pat, are you moving T.Y. Hilton way down your board? What does this do for you while Andrew Luck is out for someone like T.Y. Hilton, Dante Moncrief?
So I've kind of moved Hilton off that top tier. You know, I think when we started the whole rankings process, he was like my sixth or seventh wide receiver. And now he's down to like, I think 12th. And maybe that's not far enough. But I mean, I see kind of a big drop off between the, the Brandon Cooks, Michael Thomas, you know, those guys round out like the top 11. And then kind of a big drop off to like on my next tier would be Demaryius Thomas and DeAndre Hopkins, guys like that. And I think Hilton's on that tier now. What about you guys?
Yeah, I've got him right where Demaryius Thomas is. So, you know, if you're still doing a draft late third round, I mean, Luck's probably going to only be gone 2 to 5 weeks. There's a chance that it could be more. I mean, just because he's off the pup list doesn't mean he won't miss 6 weeks. It just means they think he might come back before then. They traded for Jacoby Brissett. And I have to mention on the podcast, because the last show we did bold predictions, I said Stephen Morris was going to take over this job and do really well. Stephen Morris got cut. Like, I don't know if the Bills GM is taking over for the Colts or whatever, but Stephen Morris has been the best guy that they've had besides Luck for 7 weeks in the preseason. He's been one of the best preseason quarterbacks each of the last two seasons. And they're like, well, we're just going to give the job to some guy who's the worst quarterback in the NFL. So I don't understand what's going on there. It doesn't mean I was wrong. It just means I got unlucky.
Yeah, Scott Tolzien is going to be starting week one, and that's a bad thing for fantasy football players. So
yes.
moving away from the season-long analysis, talking about T.Y. Hilton without Andrew Luck for the first couple weeks. So for me, and I know people have kind of scoffed at this and said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I know, Bobby, you were one of them. I'm hesitating even starting T.Y. Hilton, and I'll tell you why. There have been over the last 3 years, there have been 10 games where Hilton has played without Andrew Luck. Whatever quarterback it is, I'm sure it wasn't any worse than Scott Tolzien, right? Right. Hilton in those games has averaged just 4 receptions for 63 yards, and he scored 2 touchdowns in those 10 games. That amounts to 7.5 standard fantasy points. That would have been the number 43 wide receiver in standard leagues last year, behind guys like Brandon LaFell and Marvin Jones. So when you see that, it's really, really worrisome. Granted, they are playing the Rams in week one. I get it, but it is an outdoor game, which doesn't help someone like T.Y. Hilton. And on top of that, you know, this trickles down through the entire offense, right? It goes down to guys like Dante Moncrief, who has, you know, he requires a lot of touchdown scoring in order to live up to his potential. Frank Gore, with the Colts, he has also played 10 games without Andrew Luck. In those games, he scores nearly 2 fantasy points less per game. He has scored just 1 touchdown in the 10 games that Luck was out. So this is a nightmare scenario for the Colts. And honestly, I moved everybody down my board. Even Jack Doyle, I dropped him. In a league that I have shallow bench spots, in an industry league where I only have 5 bench spots and I'm only going to carry 1 tight end, I dropped him for Jason Witten. So if you're out there with Jack Doyle as your only tight end, I suggest you try and lock up another one and start him until Andrew Luck gets back. And, you know, if you're, again, in a league like me with a shallow bench, I suggest dropping him for someone else like Jason Witten, who's a bit safer at this moment.
You know, guys, as a University of Wisconsin graduate, I should probably come to Scott Tolzien's defense, but I really can't. So, it is kind of tough to triangulate value here with not knowing how many games Luck is going to be out. You know, I tend to agree with Bobby's estimate of like somewhere between 1 and 5 games. So, you know, throw it right in the middle. It's 3 games. And, you know, probably none of these guys, not even Hilton, would be startable without Luck. So, you know, you have to account for that. And if you're going to, you know, consider drafting or did draft Hilton as like a wide receiver too, you know, hopefully you're fairly deep at that position, because I think you're going to need some help until Luck gets back.
Yeah. Yeah. From what you're saying, Tags, he kind of reminds me of like a Robbie Anderson. And Robbie Anderson's kind of on the border for me. Like, I'd probably use him as a flex play. He's probably going to get 950 yards this season. That's what you projected for T.Y. Hilton per game while Andrew Luck is out, based on what he's done historically. So it kind of makes sense. I thought it was crazy at first, but when you mention those stats, man, I mean, T.Y. Hilton's, we know he's not the most talented player. Now, there's a couple other quarterback situations we have to keep our eye on. Tyrod Taylor might miss week one. They say they're gearing up to put Peterman in there at quarterback. Cam Newton, as we know, has not played much in the preseason. There's a chance he misses week one, and Derek Anderson would be there. I really don't know if that hurts their offense too much. I mean, Cam Newton's better at running the ball and getting them closer to the end zone, but in terms of passing, Cam Newton was horrible last year, so I don't think Derek Anderson's that much of a downgrade. Joe Flacco, we thought, might miss week one. It looks like he's going to play now. They came out and promised that he would play. So Are you worried about any of the wide receivers or running backs in that situation, in any of those three situations, Tags?
I am worried about the ones I'm worried about the most that you would think about in fantasy are Cam Newton's wide receivers, like Devin Funchess, like Kelvin Benjamin. And the reason I am is because we've seen Cam Newton throw two passes all preseason. You know, the Colts did with the smart thing, took their time with Andrew Luck. They know they're not winning this year. They're protecting their franchise, right? Whereas Cam Newton, he came out throwing at the start of training camp, ended up sore, missing a couple weeks. And now we don't really know what to expect. And the reason that I'm really concerned for their wide receivers in particular is because they're playing against the 49ers, a team that you can run all over. You know, last year, I think we all know it was a fantasy playground for running backs, and I don't think that he's going to need to throw the ball, you know, 35, 40 times. Last year against the 49ers, I've been going through this massive article I've been working on, and Cam Newton last year threw four of his 20, I think it was like 22 touchdowns or something like that against the 49ers. So this really hurts Cam Newton, and you have to worry if they're just going to run the ball down their throat. So there's definitely things to pay attention to. The Tyrod Taylor thing, it appears that he was back on the practice field today. He hasn't been completely cleared, but I do tend to think that he's going to play in week one. It's just, I mean, it's messy. If you look at some of the matchups that are taking place in week one, who the starting quarterbacks are, guys that are defending Colin Kaepernick actually have ground to stand on, because we're looking at matchups that are just like Tom Savage, Josh McCown, Jared Goff, Scott Tolzien, Tom Savage.
What's wrong with Josh McCown, man? He's fine. Josh McCown's fine.
He's fine, and he's fine enough, and that's why Robbie Anderson, I think, is okay, right? What's your take on this, Pat? Is there anybody that you're particularly worried about because of their quarterback situation in week one?
Not really, other than the Colts guys, just because I don't think any of the Bills receivers were really startable to begin with, you know, with Zay Jones, you know, not having proven anything yet.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, and you know, with Jordan Matthews still somewhat questionable because of his chest injury. You know, and as far as the Panthers, like I don't think, except in the very deepest leagues, Funchess is immediately startable as a week one play anyway. And with Benjamin, like I guess I'd still be willing to start him as like a third wideout, just because, you know, Derek Anderson, one thing he's not afraid of is challenging defense downfield, to the point of his own detriment sometimes, because he's very interception prone. But like, I'm not worried about you know, losing value or at least tremendous value on Benjamin on week one for the Newton to Anderson switch. You know, I think Benjamin's still going to get some targets and some catches. So, like, I'm not too worried about him.
Yeah, for sure. And going on, I want to hit on this other news item. The biggest, I think one of the biggest news of the weekend is that Jonathan Williams, the backup running back for the Bills, was cut.
What in the world?
I see this as a surprise, because the Bills didn't really have running back depth to begin with. And I think that's why we like Jonathan Williams as kind of like a late round stash, as like a guy that if McCoy was traded, if McCoy got hurt, you know, he's 29 years old, that Jonathan Williams could come in behind one of the top five run blocking offensive lines in all of football and kind of get the job done. Right. And now they're falling back on Mike Tolbert. Like, what is happening here, guys? And I've said, you know, a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen with Jonathan Williams. Do you hold him on rosters? My take on that is no, I don't hold him in any format. Wherever he lands, and he should land somewhere, he's a 23-year-old running back, I am not holding on to him on any roster. And people say going away from the Bills is a good thing. I would disagree.
No.
I think it was the most clear-cut. It was a clear-cut, most clear-cut path for him to make it to a starting running back in fantasy football. So, Bobby, what was your reaction when this kind of went down?
You know, my first reaction was just shock. Like, I was horrified. Like, what in the world are the Bills doing? This is the type of player you build around, right? He's 23 years old. He's your clear-cut backup running back. But then I read your tweets, and, you know, again, you talked some sense into me. If they're cutting him, he must just really suck. So, you know, I don't know. I just think these guys get paid millions of dollars to make these decisions. They probably know more about Jonathan Williams than you and I and Pat do sitting here. So, you know, I would rather at this point own Carlos Williams than Jonathan Williams, because Carlos Williams is far more talented, and he's sitting on the free agents too. I mean, there's nothing to say someone won't go out and sign him.
Yeah, it's an ugly situation. Pat, what was your take? I mean, if someone told you that the Browns were going to cut Trent Richardson years ago, you would have been like, that's a joke. But Jim Brown was kind of like ahead of that and said, I don't see anything special with Trent Richardson. So many people have come to Jonathan Williams' defense that I'm kind of like befuddled by it, because this is a team like, and the excuse was that they're tanking. You know, they're obviously clearly tanking their season and they're getting rid of him. You don't cut a backup 23-year-old running back if you're tanking. That's actually the opposite of what you would do. You want to accumulate those guys so that next year he's ready to step into a starting role. I don't know. I don't know if you're a Jonathan Williams supporter or not. I'm waiting for to hear something like there's an off the field issue, there's a suspension, something like that, even though the Bills have already said that there's not. So, Pat, what was your take on this whole situation playing out?
Yeah, it was just so funny how so many people considered Jonathan Williams one of the essential handcuffs in the offseason. You know, like if you're going to get McCoy, he's a guy that you need to get, or, you know, even standalone value as a potential touchdown vulture the way Gillisley was with McCoy last year. And, you know, now just for him to be totally gone, no value. I mean, wherever he goes, he's not going to have an immediate role, an immediate path to work, I don't think. And, you know, one of the other reasons why he was considered somewhat attractive is just because the Bills figure to be so run heavy. You know, they have a pretty good run blocking offensive line. And, you know, now Tolbert and Banyard behind him. That's just the weirdest situation. And, you know, I suppose it's a little reassuring for McCoy owners that there's no one really to, there would seem to be no one to vulture him at the goal line, but who knows? Tolbert is kind of a human bowling ball, and maybe he gets some of those short yardage touchdowns this year. But yeah, it's just a strange situation, and it's really hard to make of anything the Bills have done over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I have no idea if the Bills are ever even going to get to the goal line. So McCoy's stock has dropped quite a bit for me. He was the clear-cut number four running back behind Elliott. Now I've got him at number five. I've got Freeman ahead of him. And I've also got Jay Ajayi moved ahead of him now. I know Ajayi comes with injury risk, but and it's kind of late for that anywhere. There's not too many drafts going on. Mm-hmm. Tex, was there any other news you want to talk about?
The last piece of news, obviously, I think we need to talk about is Willie Snead getting suspended for 3 games.
Yeah.
We saw him play into the fourth quarter of, I think it was the third preseason game, and everybody was like, what's going on? It might have been the second preseason game, and nobody knew it was happening, but it kind of seems like the Saints, they said they wanted to get him some reps because of the practice time he missed. It also may have been like a Tom Brady scenario, where Tom Brady was suspended for the first 3 games last year, or 3 or 4 games, whatever it was, and they played him for 2 quarters in the fourth preseason game because they just wanted to get him some reps because he wasn't going to be playing for a while. That may have been the case with Willie Snead. What does this actually do for his outlook in 2017? Bobby, we've talked about it and that Ted Ginn was underrated continually this preseason. Does this bump Ted Ginn up anymore, or this does not really change very much for you? And who do you think kind of fills this role for Willie Snead?
Well, I don't know who fills the role quite yet. I mean, it could be any number of guys. Drew Brees just throws the ball all over the yard to everybody, so I'm sure everyone's going to get a couple more touches. I'm actually really interested in Kobe Fleener now. I would rather have him than Jack Doyle at this point, because the one game that Willie Snead missed, Kobe Fleener had his best game of the season. I don't know if that's saying anything, but it's at least worth thinking about. And Kobe Fleener came on at the end of the season. So if you need a tight end, he's a guy we'll be talking about later that you can pick up. Now, in terms of Ted Ginn's value and Willie Snead's value, I actually did not move them at all in my rankings, and it was intentional. The reason why, I had Ted Ginn really high already because he was running with the number ones. He was running number one and two wide receiver sets. Maybe the only reason he was doing that, and this would have been my guess, is that because they knew the Willie Snead suspension was coming. I think when Snead comes back, he's a better wide receiver than Ginn. I think they plug him in once he gets going, and you know, because of that, I've got him in the same spot.
Gotcha. Pat, what's your take on the situation? Like, Willie Snead, is he someone that if someone drafted already, because like I said, drafts have already happened. If you own Willie Snead, what are you doing with him at this point? Do you think he's drop worthy? I think it's important to note that he has a bye in week 5. So if they ease him in his first game back in week 4, you could essentially be without him for the first 5 weeks of the fantasy season.
Yeah, it seems funny to consider him drop worthy, but maybe in a 10-team league, he might be. You know, with the news that not only of the suspension, but as Bobby mentioned, that Ginn was running ahead of Snead in 2 receiver sets, you know, and granted the Saints do run a lot of 3 wide receiver sets, so Snead will be on the field quite a bit when they're, you know, when they're passing, most likely Snead will be out there. But, you know, at this point, I have Ginn ahead of Snead and like by a good 10 spots. I think Ginn wide receiver 38 and Snead wide receiver 48. So, yeah, I mean, I think Snead has lost some value, and it's hard to see him playing any larger role than he played last year, even though, you know, Cooks is gone and that frees up a lot of targets. And I totally agree with Bobby, too, on Fleener. Like, I've got him everywhere. I've been drafting him aggressively. I liked him even before the Snead suspension news. So, you know, I think he could be a really sneaky tight end one play this year.
Yeah.
There you go.
So we're going to answer questions from the listener mailbag. And if you want your questions answered, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com. We try to get to as many of these as we can, but the shorter the questions, the better. And league settings obviously make a difference. Before we get to that, however, I talked last week about our new partner, teamrankings.com. I just love this site. They have over 200,000 pages of all kinds of free stats, rankings, and projections for you to check out and play around with. But I also want to tell you about their premium services today. They give out top-notch advice for office pools and sports betting. Since 2005, they've built data-driven projection models for NFL, college football, and other sports, and thousands of hours of researching for sports pools like NFL Pick'em and Survivor Contest. A few of the guys from Team Rankings are actually going to join us to talk about Week 1 spread, Survivor pools, and season win totals later this week for an episode. In the meantime, they've got a great offer for you. Just go to teamrankings.com/fantasypros to save up to 10% on NFL Survivor and Pick'em Pool picks, and up to 60% on their annual subscription for all of their advice. Don't wait, because prices go up Friday. Again, that's teamrankings.com/fantasypros. All right, guys, so let's move on over to the listener mailbag. And the first question here comes from Andy R. And he says he feels like you can always find wide receivers on the waivers, but never a running back. So doesn't it make sense? Like, instead of just owning 6 or 7 wide receivers, you know, you drop a few of those guys and you pick up some of these high upside running backs that could be getting carries sometime soon, like a Samaje Perine or Jamal Williams in more shallow leagues, and just drop in the wide receivers and hope you get lucky with touches.
So I kind of disagree with that. I mean, I think it's easy to find like replacement level value at wide receiver on the waiver wire. But generally, I think what you pay for is what you get at wide receiver, whereas running backs are so much more unpredictable. And there will be guys who, you know, come out of nowhere to become RB1s this year. Guys who, you know, are probably in our 80th, 90th, 100th or higher in our rankings right now. And there will be guys like that who emerge as, you know, frontline running backs for teams this year. So, you know, yes, you're not the only one bidding on those guys. Obviously, they're going to be bidding wars for the guys who suddenly come out of the ether to have major roles for teams. But, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to do that, because if you need a wide receiver off waivers, you're not going to find a guy who's emerged to become a top wideout. Those guys are all going to get drafted. I really doubt there's going to be anyone who, like, you know, is drafted among the top 10 or 20 wide receivers next year who's unowned in fantasy leagues.
That's interesting, and it's an interesting point of view. I see both sides of this argument, and the reason I say that is because, you, like Pat said, okay, he's okay with drafting wide receivers when our listener here is talking about running backs. And the reason it makes sense in the running back, Pat said, there's going to be RB1s that are found on the waiver wire. So what the listener is essentially asking, you know, why not grab a bunch of those guys? Whereas the wide receivers, you get what you pay for. So if you're drafting wide receivers in that 11 to 16 round, you're probably going to get a guy that you're going to end up dropping at some point, because you're going to be searching for another waiver wire ad. Yeah. So I think Bobby and I have preached all off season to grab guys like Robbie Anderson or guys like Kevin White, because if Kevin White somehow overcomes all these injuries he's had and lives up to the potential that everybody thought he could have, he's got 120 target ceiling. That's the point, is that with wide receiver, let's pretend a number one wide receiver goes down. Like, let's pretend Sammy Watkins goes down. All of a sudden, nobody on that team is going to walk into 120 targets like Sammy Watkins had. Where at running back, you could find guys that are going to walk into a starting role. So a lot of people are going to be going for the running backs. Everybody knows it. So I could see the argument of both sides here, Bobby. Like, what's your take on this?
I have the extreme opposite take as Pat on this one. You know, you've heard me preach it all preseason. Yeah. I don't think that one of these wide receivers you pick up can win you a league. I think James Conner could win you a league. If Le'Veon Bell goes down, James Conner is going to be bid 95 fab, maybe 100 fab, and he's going to get 15, 20 touches per game behind a great offensive line in a great offense. He could win you a league. And if you own him, I understand there's only a 15% chance Le'Veon Bell goes down with an injury, but if it happens, it is huge. You know, if you've got Philip Dorsett and all of a sudden he emerges onto the scene with the Patriots now that he's in, you know, under Bill Belichick for whatever reason, that kind of thing happens, you know, you can pick him up and maybe he does emerge. But I think there's a much less of a chance than running backs doing it. So, you know, I think you can actually pick up replacement level running backs any given week. You go get Shane Vereen in week one, I'm happy putting him in a flex. Yeah, I think it's a pretty good matchup for him. He's going to get enough touches. You can rely on him.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting debate. And that's why I thought it was a great question to bring up. The second question I want to get to is Matt P. is asking, what are your thoughts on Chris Hogan this year? Let's start with you, Pat. There seems to be a wide differing opinion on Chris Hogan as we enter the season. You know, is it going to be Danny Amendola? Is it going to be Chris Hogan? Is it going to spread out to the running backs?
Malcolm Mitchell.
Yeah, it could be Malcolm Mitchell. What's your take on this? They also just traded for Philip Dorsett, which throws another wrinkle into everything, right? He was playing the slot for the Colts an awful lot. So where do you stand on the Chris Hogan debate?
You know, I'm generally kind of bullish on Hogan. I've got him, it looks like, wide receiver 35. And, you know, I know it's been pointed out that he finished like wide receiver 60th last year, even though he, you know, led the Patriots wide receivers in snaps. Thing is, though, a lot of those throws were obviously going to Julian Edelman, which won't be happening this year. So I think there's a good chance that he is the guy who takes up, you know, a majority of the slack for Edelman. And we've shown that, or we've seen last year that he is kind of a, like, his targets tend to be of the high quality variety, you know, very impressive yards per catch, some big plays. If you extend his season stats through the playoffs, they look even better because he was such a big producer in postseason games. So I'm kind of high on him as like a wide receiver three type. How about you guys?
You know, I don't have Chris Hogan quite as high as Pat. I mean, he's got to be owned in every league. If he's somehow available in your league, I think you got to scramble and go pick him up. With that being said, I think Malcolm Mitchell is more of the guy here. Amendola runs the same type of routes as Edelman, but I think they're going to get the best player in there, and I think it's Mitchell. Even if Hogan does get most of the snaps, I don't know if he's the kind of guy you want to start week to week, because he just has these big weeks, and then he has a lot of busts, more busts than most wide receivers, and maybe that won't be the case with Edelman gone, but I just think Mitchell has more upside, so he's the guy I'd prefer of the bunch. What do you think, Tags?
Yeah, I don't know why people are just anointing Chris Hogan the guy like to own and that he's going to be the one. Malcolm Mitchell was a rookie last year, so we just see him just scratching the surface, and nobody's really talked about him, so it really blows my mind. Chris Hogan, most people don't know that Chris Hogan played just 44 less snaps than Julian Edelman last year, so he was continually on the field, but he was only targeted, you know, minimal, like not even half the times that Julian Edelman was. There are so many targets to go around here. Who becomes the possession-style receiver? And that's my issue with anointing Chris Hogan as that
Brandon
guy.
Cooks.
Chris Hogan, yeah, well, Chris Hogan last year, he averaged 17.9 yards per reception. That's not a possession style receiver. That's a field stretcher. They're using him as their deep threat. Brandon Cooks is going to take over a lot of that role this year, but I don't know if Chris Hogan is the possession style receiver that people are anointing him as. I think it's going to be a mess. I've told people, and people have called me crazy, that I said I would rather own Kevin White than Chris Hogan. I just think that's going to be more consistent fantasy production. The upside might might be more with Hogan. Yeah, the ceiling might be higher with Hogan, but at the same time, you cannot guarantee the targets that Kevin White is going to get. So I'm limiting my Chris Hogan love. Again, if he's out there on waivers, you obviously want to pick him up, but I think that we've all made our case here in that I don't think anybody really knows what New England's going to do until we see it, but all we have to go off of is last year, and he was a full-time player, essentially, and he wasn't targeted very often, so... Bobby, what's the next question that we have on the list?
So the next question I want to ask is from Dynasty Fife. Thoughts on Mohamed Sanu as a potential wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 this year? And what about Taylor Gabriel? We haven't talked about either of these guys much. Pat, what do you think about these backup Falcons receivers?
You know, we've seen Sanu produce pretty well when Julio Jones hasn't been in the lineup. I really think it takes Julio being out for Sanu to be playable. And I kind of think there's going to be a little bit of a fall off for Taylor Gabriel this year. You know, he was very much schemed into relevance by Kyle Shanahan last year, and I know things are you know, ostensibly staying similar as far as the, you know, offensive MO with Steve Sarkisian, but you know, I just think it's kind of gimmicky. Taylor had a lot of long touchdowns. You know, I think his touchdown total is probably not sustainable. So, you know, he's not a guy I've been chasing. I don't think I own him in any leagues this year. You know, Sanu, I might have like in deeper leagues, maybe as like a wide receiver 5 or so, like, you know, just possibly a guy you could put out there if Julio's banged up, but for the most part, I don't think he's going to have a lot of value as long as Julio's, healthy and putting up the sort of big numbers we've come to expect from him.
Yeah, Mohamed Sanu is someone who last year was being drafted as a top 50, top 55 wide receiver, so people had some expectations with Atlanta going out and spending some money on him. With that being said, his production started out somewhat competent as like a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 in that range.
Yeah.
But when Taylor Gabriel got there, that's when his production somewhat declined. The interesting part here is that we really don't know how Steve Sarkisian is going to call his offense, right? This offense is going to change. Austin Hooper is going to see some targets. Taylor Gabriel, will he have a big role in this offense? Are they going to go more through Mohamed Sanu in the slot? Matt Ryan threw the ball about 80 to 90 times fewer than he typically does in a season. So there could be some added volume here. Julio Jones, his target totals were down last year. So there's a lot of people that we can expect to take a step forward. Mohamed Sanu, I think he's one of those guys that we talked about. You know, when we talk about guys that you're taking in rounds 10 through 16, he could be one of those guys where it's like a replacement level player where, let's say, Julio Jones has a matchup with Patrick Peterson and you want to play Mohamed Sanu because, you know, Tyron Matthew has been dinged up or whatever, not the same player. You could do things like that, but I think he's a very low upside option. I would much rather aim higher. I would much rather draft someone like Paul Richardson, who you can get cheaper than that. But again, it all comes back to the offense going under Steve Sarkisian and the fact that we don't know how these wide receivers are going to be used. I think you're onto something in the fact that Mohamed Sanu has been a little bit undervalued, but at the same time, I just don't see a very high ceiling here.
One thing we do know about Sarkisian is he loves to use tight ends. Last year, the Falcons had no production out of tight end. This year, right. Austin Hooper is the clear-cut starter. He's got a lot of talent. I think he's the big breakout player here. I think Sanu and Gabriel both go backwards, as Pat talked about. You know, I look at Sanu and I think he's the same player as Brandon LaFell. Nobody's drafting Brandon LaFell. The only reason you're drafting Sanu is because Jones was hurt a little bit, and that helped Sanu quite a bit. So Shanahan's gone. I'm not drafting Sanu. I'm not adding Sanu. If you drafted him, I would drop him, pick up a running back. I know Pat's probably not on board with that. But anyway, the next question is from Michael S. He wants to know if Hunter Henry can end up being a top 10 tight end despite the presence of Gates. And Henry's a player that we talked about a ton earlier on in the preseason because I was a really big fan of him. I've lowered my expectations a little bit just because of all the weapons they've got there with the Chargers. I still drafted him in quite a few cases, but top 10 tight end, he could be. Yeah, he could be a top 3 tight end. Whether or not he's going to be, I'm not really sure. And it's not because of the presence of Gates. It's because of the presence of, Mike Williams is coming back earlier. Terrell Williams was really good last year. And then you've got Keenan Allen coming back who might just get 100 receptions.
Well, yeah, it's a difficult scenario to judge, but Hunter Henry, can he do it? Abso-friggin-lutely. I mean, he finished as a number 11 tight end last year on 53 targets. So
yes.
We know that it's definitely possible. And a stat I threw out on our last podcast was that, so there were only 12 tight ends who scored 6 or more touchdowns in 2016. Of those guys, 11 of them finished, I want to say it was a top 12 fantasy tight end. So can we project him for 6 touchdowns? Yes. Yes, we can. Yes, I'm aboard this train. He's a little bit riskier than some guys like Jason Witten, than the guys like I moved up, like Zach Ertz. I think Zach Ertz is someone who has skyrocketed up my draft boards just simply because Jordan Matthews is gone and Ertz blew fantasy leagues out of the water last year when Jordan Matthews was out. So he's someone who's skyrocketed up my boards despite the addition of Alshon Jeffrey. Pat, where do you sit on Hunter Henry? Is there another tight end in the range where he was being drafted that maybe you like more on a weekly basis?
Yeah, so I do believe in the talent, and I've got him tight end 13, so it wouldn't be that much of a leap for him to sneak into the top 10. I think we can expect a little bit of a return to earth as far as the touchdown rate. You know, one every fewer than 7 targets is probably unsustainable, and I do think he can be somewhat productive even with Gates there. But I don't know that he's a guy I would want to be starting every week just because they're and really what Bobby mentioned is so relevant. Just the fact that Allen wasn't there last year. And obviously he's going to be a target sponge for as long as he can stay healthy. Plus Tyrell Williams, plus maybe Mike Williams coming back fairly soon. There's just so much target competition there. And they like to run the ball too. So You know, a guy that I've actually got ahead of him, and probably a lot of people are going to scoff at this, is Kobe Fleener, who we talked about earlier. You know, I just think there's a clearer path for Fleener to consistently get 5, 6, 7 targets a game, whereas I think there are going to be weeks when Henry just kind of disappears from the Chargers offense.
Yeah, I think Fleener's got big-time upside, too. I mean, who would be surprised if he finishes a top-4 tight end this year? I'm not saying to expect it, but he definitely has that kind of upside. I mean, we've seen what Drew Brees did with, like, an ancient Ben Watson a few years ago. Remember, Tex?
I do remember that. And, yeah, Kobe Fleener was being drafted as a top-6 tight end last year, so it shouldn't shock anybody if it happens. I mean, I think after we saw him last year, we don't feel comfortable, you know, projecting.
He knows the
offense
now. He was a top-8 tight end in the second half of the football season last year, so.
Yeah, he totaled 150 more yards than Hunter Henry did last year, just the touchdowns that were lacking. And we'd be shocked if Kobe Fleener scores 8 touchdowns this year?
Nope.
I know I wouldn't. And I misspoke, by the way. The 6 touchdowns of tight ends, only 9 tight ends scored 6 touchdowns, and all but one of them finished top 12. So I'm sorry about that stat if you guys caught it. I know you guys are always on me. You guys are like the police if I screw up something. So I always want to make sure I fix it if I can. But going down to the next question, I'm going to skip one that I got over to because I think it's a really, really good question. And I'm going to go to you first, Pat. What offenses do you think will surprise people this year? It can be either positively or negatively. You know, is there a team last year who was really good on offense that you expect to take a step back where people are expecting, you know, bigger things? And then, you know, one on the flip side, let's just get one from each side. One positive offense, one negative offense in what people believe.
All right, so I'm a Green Bay Packers fan, so it almost pains me to tip my cap to these guys, but I think the Minnesota Vikings have a potentially very interesting, much improved offense. You know, they were just done in by injuries to their offensive line last year, and, you know, even with a row of turnstiles in front of them, Sam Bradford managed to have, like, his best efficiency numbers of his career. And, you know, he's got two really good wide receiver weapons in Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. He's got a terrific high volume tight end in Kyle Rudolph. You know, he's got a potentially dynamic running back in Dalvin Cook. You know, it's a really interesting offense. I like that the roles are pretty clearly defined. I don't think there's going to be a lot of, I think they're going to be one of the lower teams as far as percentage of targets to third and fourth wide receivers. So, you know, I think Diggs and Thielen are going to be pretty much obvious starters every week. And yeah, I actually think Thielen is going to be like pushing wide receiver 2 value this year. So really like that offense. And I think even Sam Bradford is going to be playable a lot of weeks. And oh, by the way, their schedule is just like Charmin soft this year, which is going to help a lot. So it's going to make all these guys startable, I think, on almost a weekly basis. And for maybe a bit of a decline, the Washington offense, I think, could be in for a bit of pullback. Just because, you know, a major change with DeSean Jackson being replaced by Terrell Pryor. You know, we haven't really seen Pryor and Cousins on the same page yet. You know, we don't know if Jordan Reed can stay healthy. If he can't, you know, there could be some issues with the passing game. Basically, I still think they have a very mediocre set of running backs. Samaje Perine didn't really do anything to impress in the preseason. And if they can't get the running game going, I think it's going to be asking a lot of Kirk Cousins, you know, to continue to be a high efficiency quarterback. You know, if the opposing defenses don't really have to honor the run, it's going to put stress on Cousins. And I don't know, I guess I've always been sort of, you know, maybe it's a Big Ten thing, but I've always sort of been grudging in my willingness to admit that Cousins is a true QB1 for fantasy. Still not entirely sure he is, even though he's had 2 pretty good seasons. So I don't know. It just would not surprise me if, you know, the Washington offense took a step back.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. It wouldn't surprise me either if Kirk Cousins threw for 5,000 passing yards. He keeps getting it done. And the more I watch him, the more impressed I am. He just keeps developing and growing. Tags, I've got a couple offenses for you that I think are going to get better. He already touched on the Vikings. I think the Bengals, especially if they can stay healthy with AJ Green, Tyler Eifert, they just added Ross, they've got Joe Mixon. this could be a really great offense, even without the offensive line there. The Chargers, I've talked about them before. I think their offense is so good. Plus, they've got the two great defensive ends. I think they're better than anybody in the AFC besides the Patriots. I think they'll challenge for the Super Bowl. And the other team is the Philadelphia Eagles. It's just this offensive line finally being healthy. Wentz is a second-year quarterback. We've seen flashes of him being quite good. If they can figure out the running back situation, you know, I hate to say, I've actually been really impressed with Alshon Jeffrey here in the preseason. Again, he's probably going to get hurt. It's just what he does. But if he stays healthy, he's really going to help them out. Ertz is emerging. So I'm fond of those offenses. It's really hard to predict which offenses are going to take a step back, because if you look at it every single year, the five offenses that take a big step back, it's always the ones who have the most injuries to their offensive line or to a quarterback or a big wide receiver or something like that. So I'm not in the business to predict offensive line injuries. So I'm going to just skip that one there, Tex.
Well, I actually, Pat kind of stole the offenses that I was going to use for this one. I actually agree with him on both fronts. I think that it's very possible the Redskins take a step back. People don't realize the effect that DeSean Jackson has on a defense, and they really don't. You know, Jameson Crowder is going to be a fine wide receiver. I just don't know if they have a possession wide receiver. Terrell Pryor saw just seven targets in the preseason. He dropped three of them, and I saw a couple of them, and they were right there. It's not that they were bad balls or anything like that, so that's definitely a possible. I will throw out the Cowboys as a team that are going to disappoint. They're an offense that people are expecting a lot out of, and you know, you can only lose so many parts of your offense and be okay. Ezekiel Elliott is the linchpin for that offense, and if they're missing him for 6 weeks, that is going to severely harm them.
Even yeah, what's that do to Dak? I think it hurts him quite a bit.
It does. It hurts Dak. It hurts Dez. There's just so many questions. They didn't add a solid number two wide receiver to play opposite Dez Bryant. So again, this is an offense I do believe that they struggle a lot more this year. And if, you know, outside the Vikings, because I think that's a great one, I would say that the 49ers could surprise some people. You know, Kyle Shanahan does have an effect on offenses.
You're right. Yeah.
And, you know, you go back to thinking about like Chip Kelly, right? Chip Kelly, what he did to the Eagles. Everybody said all the Eagles have is, you know, LeSean McCoy. That's really all they have. And DeSean Jackson, people were considering him as a very boomer bust option. So it's possible that he has that effect on that offense. I'm just worried about it's Pierre Garçon and it's Carlos Hyde and that's it. You know, they traded away Vance McDonald, who I think is a little bit underrated weapon. But I thought it was a great question to ask. So Greg, that was a great question.
Hey, let's move on over and talk about the waiver wire. So we've got, you know, we're going to have a waiver wire episode every single week during the regular season. And I know a lot of people aren't scrambling to replace some injured player. But, you know, if you do need to pick some guys up, there's a lot of people out there who are less than 50% owned, some less than 20 and even 10% owned that I think are worth looking at. And, you know, we already talked about some guys that you probably could drop at this point. Jack Doyle. There were several others. Jonathan Williams, who a lot of people drafted. I don't really want to talk about tight end because I think all of us agree Kobe Fleener is probably the pickup. He's still available in 65% of leagues, and that just doesn't make sense to me. But let's talk about quarterback, okay? So we've got all these injured starters. We've got Andrew Luck. Maybe Cam Newton misses. Maybe Tyrod Taylor misses. If you need to replace one of these guys, Pat, I'm looking at Sam Bradford or Carson Palmer. Bradford's available in 85% of leagues. What do you think about their two matchups this week, and is there anyone else on the radar?
Those two would probably be right at the top of my list, Bobby, especially with Palmer having, he comes out of the gate with such a favorable schedule the first 3 or 4 weeks before it turns a little rougher. And, you know, same with Bradford. I really think he's consistently playable throughout the season just because there's a paucity of tough matchups on his schedule this week. You know, just maybe as a possible flyer. You know, Brian Hoyer, for as long as he's healthy, always seems to put up pretty decent numbers. So, you know, he might be a guy in a deeper league if Palmer and Bradford are already owned and you need to grab someone.
All right. So I'm going to go. So obviously we know certain, you know, Jared Goff is a potential option against the Colts, who are going to be missing their number one cornerback. We know they're not a very good team. Game script should be good. But I'm going to go with one that's not owned in a lot of leagues and that I would have ranked higher. And that's Alex Smith. I'm sure Sam Bradford's owned in a lot of leagues. Otherwise I'd throw him out there against the Saints. But let's talk about Alex Smith for a second. There were just five games last year in which the Chiefs allowed 27 or more points to the opponent. I think that we're all expecting the Patriots to score that many points, right? in those games where the Chiefs allowed 27 or more points, Alex Smith averaged 39 pass attempts in those games with he averaged 29 attempts in all other games. His two best fantasy games from last year came in games where they allowed 27 or more points. He is a rock solid two quarterback option this week. And if you need to stream a quarterback, why not play a guy that's slated to be in a high scoring game? The over and the under for the Patriots game is now up. It came down a little bit. It's at 48. But I think Alex Smith is actually a solid option for week one and a guy that's essentially playing for his job.
Yeah, he was great in week one last year, too. Alex Smith is always intriguing because everyone thinks he has low upside. But every once in a while, he puts up these big games. And I think it could be this week against the Patriots as they're trying to come back, likely, against Tom Brady and friends. Let's move on over to running back. And Jamaal Charles is getting scooped up more and more. He's now 44% owned. But if he's not owned in your league, I'm telling you, he might just completely split carries 50-50 with C.J. Anderson. He's looked really good. He's the all-time NFL leader in yards per carry. He looked great in pass blocking. He just looks pretty healthy right now. And I know he's older, so he's not the same dynamic player. It's not like he's going to be a running back one or anything like that. But right now, if you need someone in the flex, and if you need someone with some upside, I wouldn't be shocked if he takes over this job. And then the other guy I want to talk about, Chris Carson for the Seattle Seahawks. I've said it time and time again. He's now 7% owned after being 0% owned just a week ago. Eddie Lacy's banged up. CJ Procise is banged up. Thomas Rawls is just not very good, in my opinion. And Chris Carson's been lighting it up in the preseason. Pete Carroll loves him. I think it's only a matter of time before he gets plenty of snaps on the field and gets to prove himself. And if he dominates, he might just take over the job and never look back.
He's a weird one for me because I think it requires two injuries for Carson to see the field. So there's other guys that I'd probably rather take a shot on. I understand that people were excited about him in the preseason, but the fact that he didn't earn that starting job, I think it's kind of passed him by. Ed okay. Lacy against the Packers in week one, his old team, is very interesting, but he's not on the waiver wire. We want to talk about some guys. I think Latavius Murray, as much as I said I would not draft him, I think he's an interesting option for week one. And I say that because they are playing the Saints. They're going to be at home. The Saints allow a lot of points. You know, they allowed 18 rushing touchdowns last year. And if we've seen anything from this preseason, it's that Latavius Murray seems to be getting the short yardage stuff. He may be the Matt Asiata of this offense. And we know, as much as, you know, he didn't live up to what we thought he was going to be in Oakland, I think he's a definite upgrade over Matt Asiata. So I think he's an interesting one if you need like someone for week one, just while you're waiting for a Doug Martin suspension, or, you know, you don't know if you have Ezekiel Elliott, someone like that. But if you're in a PPR league, I think looking at someone like Chris Thompson, Darren Sproles, Charles Sims, maybe those are guys that can potentially fill a slight void. But, you know, running back is, it's all about preference in terms of what you're looking for and backup running backs.
So Tags, don't take this as a dig at Carlos Hyde, because I know you are the world's biggest Carlos Hyde fan. But Matt Breida, I think, is a potentially interesting pickup, just because, you know, with the 49ers kind of clearing house at the running back position behind Hyde, you know, Hightower gone, Joe Williams on injured reserve. Breida is sort of the only game in town as far as the backup running backs go. And, you know, a guy I think who really impressed the organization during training camp in the preseason. So a guy that maybe, you know, could in deeper leagues be an interesting upside play. You know, Marlon Mack, I think if he's unowned in any leagues, is probably worth a shot as a potential heir to Frank Gore's job, at least once, you know, Andrew Luck gets back and the Colts offense returns to peak capacity. And, you know, maybe another guy I'd throw out there, I think in most of the sharkier leagues around, he's already owned, but, you know, in some of the leagues where, you know, maybe half or more of the owners aren't acutely aware of what's going on, I think Rex Burkhead could be an interesting pickup. You know, I think there's still a lot that's to be determined in that Patriots backfield, but Burkhead seems like a guy with a pretty attractive upside.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Rex Burkhead ends up with 15, 20 touches in week one. We just have no idea what Belichick's going to do. And he said Gillislee needs some more work. I think Gillislee's the better talent by far, but that doesn't mean that he's going to play in week one and get all the work. So it's an interesting one. I like him a lot for DFS GPP because no one's really going to be thinking about him. With that being said, I don't know if I want to trust him in my flex, but he's definitely worth owning, in my opinion, as a speculative ad in terms of, like, maybe he does end up taking over the job. He's worth owning just in case. Now, Tags, let's move on over to wide receiver. Why don't you give us a couple names first?
Paul Richardson. I've been kind of shouting his name out, and like, you know, not many people have listened, but it could all come to fruition in week one. He is going against Green Bay. Green Bay's secondary has been atrocious. We all know that. And it was particularly to the wide receiver position last year. We know that Tyler Lockett has been trying to come back from his injury that was pretty gruesome last year. He may not be completely 100%. Paul Richardson is someone who is starting in two wide receiver sets. Before, we had to worry about Jermaine Kearse and, like, you know, is Pete Carroll going to pull some shenanigans? And I think them trading away Jermaine Kearse shows all the confidence in the world in Paul Richardson. So for me, he's a wide receiver four in week one. And I think, you know, if he goes off in week one, let's pretend that he gets 70 yards and a touchdown, which I don't think is unrealistic to shoot for, he's going to be one of the top waiver wire ads, because people all of a sudden are going to realize, like, wait a minute, who's this Paul Richardson guy? Wait, over the last four games of last year, he was really friggin' good. Oh yeah, and he did really good in week one. Maybe we should add him. Do it now. Don't wait until after week one. Put him on your roster.
My guys, before we move on over to Pat really quick, my number one guy is Robbie Anderson. I can't believe he's still available in 80% of leagues. He's the number one. Josh McCown's not a terrible passer, and they're going to be passing a lot because they're playing from behind. Robbie Anderson ran a 4.30 40-yard dash. He's 6'3". He's got some skills. He showed it off last season, got lots of targets. I talked about him last show, so I'm not going to rave on him too long, but he's the guy to pick up. Also, Malcolm Mitchell, still 4% owned. Kind of crazy to me. Devin Funchess, I know Cam might be banged up, but Funchess has big-time upside, and he might be useful in week one as well. And then Kenny Golladay. I'm not too excited about Kenny Golladay, but if you need a warm body, he's got some upside as well. So plenty of guys at wide receiver that I like. Pat, who are some of your guys?
Really like those calls by both you guys. Robbie Anderson, I mean, especially with Austin Seferian Jenkins not available. A nice potential volume play. My guy would be Kendall Wright, I think, just because you guys already mentioned the number of targets that are available there, and that being a potential reason to like Kevin White. Well, I think it's also a reason to potentially like Kendall Wright, you know, even though he's technically the third wide receiver and won't be in on two wide receiver sets, or at least, you know, not to start. But, you know, I think there are going to be a lot of targets there for Kendall. And, you know, after a lot of people having forgotten about him the last couple of years, I think he could return to relevance in 2017.
So, Tags, we talked about it last week with Pittsburgh Steelers and Jacksonville Jaguars just having fabulous matchups. If you play the game that Tags and I do where we don't even draft the defense, those are the pickups right now. They're available in a lot of leagues, and they've got great matchups, so I'm picking them up. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today's show. Pat, we really appreciate you coming on. It was fun chatting with you, and good luck in fantasy this season.
Hey, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Great to be on with you. Love your podcast. I listen as often as I can, so... thanks, guys. Good luck this season.
Thanks, Pat. You too. For those of you listening at home, we've got three more shows this week. We've got the episode with TeamRankings.com, where we're going to be talking about week one spreads, pick 'em pool contests, and survivor contests. And then we're going to be doing week one rankings with Jake Seeley of RotoExperts.com. And then we're going to do a DFS episode where we talk about FanDuel, DraftKings, PlayDraft.com to get you all geared up for the big contest for week one. And also, thank you to the sponsors of today's show, PristineAuction.com and TeamRankings.com/FantasyPros. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.